And so in the timeline, the evidence coming up relates to the CX report commissioned by the government in 1990, which alleged impropriety and irregularity in relation to certain transactions. And in 2010, a complaint was lodged by Accountability in Southern Africa, Advocate Paul Hoffman. A provisional report was then issued in December 2016, the initial investigations having been done by Advocate Madan Sala and then taken over by Advocate Mkubani when she took office in 15th October 2016. The final report was then issued on the 19th of June 2017 with a number of recommendations. There was an urgent application brought to the High Court initially to challenge one component of the relief sought on an urgent basis, and that related to the finding in or the recommendation in the report pertaining to the amendment of section 224 of the Constitution relating to the Reserve Bank. And so an urgent application was brought to the High Court in August of 2017. A judgment was handed down by a judge in the Gauteng Division, Pretoria. The relief sought was not opposed by Advocate Mkubani at the time. And despite the non-opposition, the party, the applicants at the time thought that it was a matter of importance that required a judgment in respect of the relief being sought. And what the court then did was it considered the relief, and it then made an order, which you will see on the sheet handed up, that paragraph 7.2 of the remedial action, which instructs the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services to initiate the process to amend section 224 of the Constitution to alter the constitutional mandate of the Reserve Bank, be reviewed and set aside. The effect of this was that the public protector was ordered to pay the cost of the application up to and including the filing of an answering affidavit, such costs to include the cost of employing two counsel. Now, in a number of these in a number of these judgments to which I refer you, and I refer you to dicta in the judgment, underlying the judgments was affidavits filed by the parties to the case, as well as affidavits filed by the public protector. I'm not taking you specifically to the affidavits of the public protector at this stage, because it would be more appropriate to do so when, if and when she comes and gives evidence. So in taking you to the judgment of Murphy J in this instance, he pointed out that one of the difficulties which arose in this matter was that the relief that was contained in the final report was not foreshadowed in the preliminary report, and that nowhere in the preliminary report did the public protector disclose that she was considering remedial action that would amend the primary object of the Reserve Bank, given the far-reaching nature of the impugned remedial action. And the, sorry, I'm at paragraph 54 of the judgment of Murphy J. Let me
assist in getting it up on the screen.
Nice. Nowhere in the preliminary, was she considering the remedial action that would amend the primary object of the Reserve Bank. Given the far-reaching nature of the impugned remedial action and the reasonably foreseeable material impact it would have on the Reserve Bank and the stability of the financial sector, it was incumbent upon the public protector to have given notice to the Reserve Bank of this intended action and to have called for comment on it. She amended the scope of the investigation and the remedial action without notice to any person likely to be affected. And then it went on that the Reserve Bank only received the copy after the press conference on 19 June 2017, where the final report was released. It was denied an opportunity to explain the importance of its mandate and to ensure price stability as an integral part of sustainable and balanced economic growth. In the result, the public protector's announcement of the remedial action was insufficiently informed. The court then, in paragraph 55, concludes that the attempt to pass off the remedial action as a mere recommendation is disingenuous. And this is the court.
Just a pause, Advocate Bauer. I see your hand is up, Advocate Mpofu.
Yes, Chair. No, I just wanted to inquire whether the document that was on the screen share, is it done or is it, has it just disappeared? It disappeared on our side, so I wasn't sure whether it was because it's finished or there was a technical problem.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Proceed, Advocate Bauer.
Sorry, if you're on, I'm not sure what document you're on, but it's bundle A. If you're in bundle A, it would be page 89 that I'm on, of the judgment. That helps. Okay, I'm told that even though I don't see it on the screen, those on Zoom does see it.
No.
Are you not seeing it, Advocate Mpofu?
No. I saw it when I was talking to the chair. It came back, but now it's gone again.
Yeah, they've stopped sharing. Can you just flight it again? It's not showing here. It's only showing Advocate Mpofu, the big name.
You mean just the big letters, not the big name?
Oh, letters, yes.
If the bottom of the judgments are all in bundle. The court, I'm going to read it, Advocate Mpofu, I'm at bundle A, page 89, which has got, you will be aware that in bundle A, all the judgments are contained in it, and I'm on paragraph 55 of the judgment.
Okay. Thank you.
If you go up to paragraph 55, the screen's now showing paragraph 58.
Yeah, but should we manipulate it ourselves or should we leave it to the...
Well,
There we are.
It is a technical problem. I'm going to give you the references because you do have these documents yourself. So I'll do that to make it easier for you.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll read from the top again. The attempt to pass off the remedial action as a mere recommendation is disingenuous. The language in which the remedial action is formulated is peremptory. The public protector's somewhat unrepentant alignment with one side of the public debate, besides ignoring much of the criticism of the Speaker and the Governor, was censored by counsel as heedless of its likely impact. In the replying affidavit, the governor is equally unsparing in his criticism. The explanation for the remedial action, he says, reveals the public protector's lack of understanding of the ambit of the Reserve Bank's powers. He states, the public protector's impugned remedial action had immediate and damaging consequences for the country. It is clear from her answering affidavit that she had no regard to the inevitable and serious impact of a report before releasing it. The report was reckless. The public protector's explanation for it is based on a clear lack of understanding of the Constitution. It perpetuates a fundamental misunderstanding of the bank's powers and functions. The court then goes on in paragraph 57 to say that the public protector's superficial reasoning and erroneous findings on the issue as appear in the final report and the answering affidavit do not provide a rational basis for the remedial action, and hence the criticisms of it are well-founded. The remedial action must be reviewed and set aside under section 6, 2F and 2H of PAJA. Now, we will come to it at a later stage about the application of PAJA, but Advocate Mpofu touched on it, that subsequently the courts have concluded it's the principle of legality and not PAJA that applies to the public protector's decisions. In the conclusion, the court said, in view of the various grounds upon which the remedial action can and must be set aside, there is no need to pronounce conclusively on the validity of all the governor's much criticism. Suffice it to say, the public protector's explanation and begrudging concession of unconstitutionality offers no defense to the charge of illegality, irrationality, and procedural unfairness. It is disconcerting that she seems impervious to the criticism or otherwise disinclined to address it. The court is not sympathetic to the difficult task of the public protector. She is expected to deal with, at times, complex and challenging matters with limited resources and without the benefit of rigorous forensic techniques. It is easy to err in informal alternative dispute resolution processes. However, there is no getting away from the fact that the public protector is the constitutionally appointed custodian of legality and due process in the public administration. She risks the charge of hypocrisy and incompetence if she does not hold herself to an equal or higher standard than that to which she holds those subject to her. A dismissive and procedurally unfair approach by the public protector to import matters placed before her by prominent role players in the affairs of state will tarnish her reputation and damage the legitimacy of the office. She would do well to reflect more deeply on the conduct of this investigation and the criticism of her by the Governor of the Reserve Bank and the Speaker of Parliament. So what then transpires is that a further review gets brought on the report and the other grounds of review that is set out in the report. And you will see on the timeline document that the Minister of Finance, the South African Reserve Bank, and Absa Bank brings applications to review and set to review it and set it aside. The matter then comes before a full bench in Gauteng, three judges, and they consolidate all three applications, and the public protector files answering papers in all of them. It is in this context that the Rule 53 record also gets filed, and in respect of which there is disclosure of certain handwritten notes, which we will then come to later. And if you turn the page of the note that we had provided, you will see that under what is 60.1, the order of the court is then provided, where there is a joinder of all the respondents.
Just a pause, Advocate Bauer. Advocate Mpofu?
No, it's fine, Chair. We lost Advocate Bauer just for a few seconds. I don't think, if she was just reading the judgment, we'll follow it. We couldn't hear her for about a minute or so.
Okay, no, thank
but
you.
But she's back now.
All right.
Sorry, Advocate Mpofu, I'm actually on the wrong page, so it's good you interrupted me. The judgment was handed down by the full bench on the 16th of February 2018, and the order that they make is that they dismiss the points in limine which is raised by the public protector and sets out that the remedial action, the remaining remedial action that is contained in the report, is reviewed and set aside. And the court then orders and makes a very specific court order that the public protector must pay the cost of APSA on an attorney-client scale, including the cost of three counsel. They must pay 85% of the cost of the Reserve Bank on an attorney-client scale, including three counsel. And then they must pay 15, the public protector in a personal capacity, must pay 15% of the cost of the South African Reserve Bank on an attorney-client scale, including the cost of three counsel de bonis proprius. There is then an appeal from this judgment. An application for leave to appeal is brought, and seeking leave to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and that is dismissed with costs. And the appeal was for leave to appeal the cost order that was granted against the public protector personally. And the South African Reserve Bank then sought leave to cross-appeal for an order declaring that the public protector abused the office during the investigation. What follows on that, you see on page 4, and I'm not going to take you in detail to the provisions of the High Court judgment because it's a lengthy judgment, and when we go through the affidavits and the public protector comes and gives evidence, I will highlight certain paragraphs of the judgment with you. The matter then comes before the Constitutional Court as a direct application for leave to appeal directly to the court. And there is then a majority judgment, which is written by Justices Kampepe and Toron, and a dissenting judgment, which is then written by the then Chief Justice Mogoeng, in which Acting Justice Goliath concurs with him. So we have a judgment of 8 judges, I think it was a bench of 10 that sat, 8 judges for the majority and a dissent for 2. And effectively what the Constitutional Court did was it allowed and it granted the application for leave to appeal. It dismissed the appeal. In other words, the High Court order from the full court stood as far as cost was concerned. And it said as far as the appeal to the Constitutional Court was concerned, there was no order as to cost. It similarly dismissed the Reserve Bank's cross-appeal for a declaratory order that the public protector abused the office in conducting the investigation, also with no order as to cost. And so these were the cases from which the judgments emanated, and there is quite an extensive majority judgment from the Constitutional Court looking at the various grounds of review and effectively in essence agreeing with the full bench decision in the High Court. That is the background and the context in which the evidence from today's witness takes place. And Mr. Chairperson, we would like to call Mr. Tebogo Kekana, who will be giving evidence virtually.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, I now recognize you to introduce the witness with all the preliminaries that you have to do.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everybody. Mr. Kekana, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good morning, sir. Can I please ask you to state your full name for the record? Mr. Kekana, you have been summoned subject to the provisions of Section 16 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act 2004 to appear before this committee as a witness and to answer questions in respect of the committee's inquiry into the removal of the public protector, Advocate Mukwebane. Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of this inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that the evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Please be aware further that in terms of Section 17(2) of the Powers Act, a person who willfully furnishes a House or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. So you will now be required to take an oath or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is truthful. You may choose to take either the oath or the affirmation. Which do you prefer?
The oath.
Now, please ask that you raise your right hand and repeat after me. I swear that the evidence I shall give.
I swear that the evidence that I shall give.
Shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Chair, the witness is now duly sworn in. Thank you, Mr. Kekana.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, and thank you to Mr. Kekana. I now recognize Advocate Bauer.
Good morning, Mr. Kekana.
Good morning.
You deposed to an affidavit dated, I think it's, December 2019. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. And what did you do with that affidavit?
I sent it to the speaker and to the presidency.
Okay. And let me start.
Just before you start, Advocate Baum, I'm sorry. I see your hand, Advocate Mpofu.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Now, I just wanted to make a request through you and Advocate Bauer. This glare is killing my eyes here. If you could ask the witness, if it's at all possible, to kindly close those curtains or blinds behind him, so that otherwise, by the time we finish with him, we'll be blind here. Or at least I will be.
So is the sun coming through the windows affecting you?
Yes, the glare that is coming there. But I see that it's blind, so maybe they can be just closed. I don't know where he is. It might not be up to him, but if it is, can he please do that?
Mr. Teboho Kekana, is there anything you can do there? Apologies, members, I suppose.
understand that he got kicked out and he just got in again. I hope that was not the intention of Advocate Mpofu to have him kicked out, but he's back, Advocate Mpofu. He was kicked out.
Yeah, it was my intention, Chair, but it looked like it didn't work. Yeah.
I didn't want to go there. Mr. Teboho Gagan, are you back? You are muted.
Oh, yes, I'm back, Chair.
Okay. Are you able to just maybe close the blinds behind you without it being dark? Close all of them.
Okay, Chair. I certainly can do that.
Okay. Please. We do want to see you. We don't want you to be in the dark. Yeah, that seems to be working. Fine. That's fine. The other one, it's too dark. Okay. Okay.
Is that better, Chair?
Yeah. Even if you just close them halfway, not completely, just halfway. A little bit of light and a little bit of darkness. It would help. Just halfway.
Just halfway.
Okay. The one that is behind you, actually.
All right. Okay.
You've just dealt with the one on the side.
I hope
it won't make you get out of the system now. Can you just quickly do that for a second?
For sure.
That's fine. Don't completely close it. Thank you. Because we do want to see you. Thank you, Mr. Kekane. Yeah, mm-hmm. Now I'm learning as a chair to do other things.
Yes, I see.
Than chairing. Thank you. Advocate Bauer.
Sorry, Mr. Kekane. We had just started. You are deposed to this affidavit on the 12th of December. And you had forwarded this affidavit to Parliament and to the President's office. What was the reason for doing this affidavit?
I felt that I needed to report misconduct which I had observed at the Office of the Public Protector.
And in paragraph 4, you say you made it as a protected disclosure. Why was that?
I remember at the time I was charged for other misconduct, so I didn't want to attract any further charges towards me.
Okay. And you were still then in the employ of the public protector?
That's correct.
Now, if we go to, did you get a response to your correspondence?
I think I did get an acknowledgement from the Deputy Speaker, dated 14 January 2020.
Now, in paragraph 7 of your affidavit, you set out that you qualified from the University of Pretoria with an LLB degree in 2014. You then proceeded to do articles. You worked for the Road Accident Fund and you joined the Public Protector as an investigator in October 2011. Correct?
Yes, that's correct, except it says 2004, not 2014.
That's correct. You then, as an investigator, describe your tasks as attending to all incoming complaints and preliminary investigations at that time and perform quality assessments of complaints, drafted memoranda, reports and correspondence for the public protector. Correct?
That's right.
In December 2016, after Advocate Mkubani was appointed, you were appointed as the senior investigator in the quality assurance unit of the public protector?
That's correct.
Did you apply for this post?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what did your task entail as the quality assurance unit?
It entailed assisting the public protector with standardization of investigation reports, quality check of all reports, and following procedures in terms of editing and reviewing of reports.
And you also dealt with Section 7(i) notices within the Institute.
That's correct.
Right. Now, you say in January 2017 you transferred to the private office of the public protector. Am I correct in understanding that that is the office where the public protector and the deputy public protector is located, which is commonly referred to as the private office?
That's correct.
And you reported directly to Advocate Mkubani?
That's also correct.
Did you apply for this job?
No, I didn't apply for the job.
How did you come to be appointed?
I was approached by HR, who indicated to me that there was a vacancy since the last investigator working in the private office had left in December 2016, and whether I would be interested in working with the public protector in the public, in the private office. And I agreed. I didn't have any issues with that.
Okay. You then indicated, tell us a little bit about what you did in the private office.
I did investigations identified by the PP, formal assessments of investigations, report writing. I would also attend to queries on behalf of the public protector, correspondences, attendance to the task team meetings and think tanks. And I would also review and edit reports, do research, and I think also supervise trainee investigators.
And you remained in the private office until December 2017?
That's correct.
We'll come in a moment to the circumstances under which you left the private office. But for now, we'll just continue to say you then transferred to what was the unit in head office called Provincial Investigations and Integration Unit.
That's right.
And you were a senior investigator conducting investigations, drafting notices and reports, and dealing with matters in that unit.
That's right.
All right. And you detail some of the information specifically relating to the CX report that came to your attention in your affidavit.
Yes.
So let's start there. We know what the nature of this complaint was, and you set that out in paragraph 14, right? And in paragraph 15, the provisional report.
Yeah,
had
just a pause, Advocate Bauer. I recognize you, Advocate Mpofu. I see your hand. Advocate Mpofu.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted at this point to place something on the record, Chair, and you can make a ruling. But if you remember before, I've said I raised certain things just so that it must not be said that we have acquiesced in them. This witness is, as you might know, a subpoenaed witness, subpoenaed by the evidence leader. But that's an issue we'll deal with later. But I'm just placing it for the record. Secondly, this is the point that we referred to in the in our opening address, Chair, just to alert you, so where we said there might be a clash between your proceedings and the criminal matters that are underway. This witness has given a statement to the police in the course of the criminal matter that is pending regarding this very issue of CX, which is why I'm raising it at this point. And it's ordinarily, he would know better as an attorney. It would be improper for him to give evidence in respect of matters which are part of pending criminal proceedings, because we call it as lawyers double jeopardy. So I just want to place that on the record and as an objection, and whatever ruling is made is made, but we must not, it must never be said that we did not warn the committee that it might be making itself guilty of double jeopardy. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Your objection is noted. Advocate Bauer.
Chair, you have to make a ruling, I'm afraid. Or consider what I've just said. It can't just be as if I've said nothing.
You have not said nothing. I have noted your objective, the objection, and I'm asking Advocate Bauer to proceed. That's the ruling I'm making.
Yes, well, then you must say so, Chair. It can, that's what I'm saying. So you're not prepared to consider this submission?
That's the point I have made, that we have listened to you. You have placed on record, not for the first, you did correctly as you indicated the first time, that when we get to that point, there are some matters you would raise. You are raising them now. And I'm saying we are noting that registration of that point and objection.
Yes.
But I am asking Advocate Bauer to proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Mr. Kitani, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Hi.
Just before you proceed, so that you just help me. I don't want to have a legacy hand from you, so that you can drop it, so that when it is up, I know it's a new hand. Advocate Mpofu. Advocate Mpofu.
Sorry, Chair. Yes, now I think, yes, Chair, I know that. I think, unfortunately, I'm unable to raise both hands in exasperation, but I'll lower this one.
Please, you've put it back, please lower it so that it doesn't become a legacy hand. I need to be watching your hand, which must be a live hand, not a legacy hand. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Advocate Bauer.
Sorry. Mr. Kikani, we were on paragraph 15 of your affidavit, in which you make reference to the provisional report. Did you have any involvement in the preparation of the provisional report?
No.
Right. Now, the provisional report is sometimes also referred to as a preliminary report, because I've heard some people at the PP's office refer to them as preliminary reports and others refer to them as provisional reports, correct?
Yes.
You say in your statement that the provisional report has never been quality assured prior to it having been leaked to the public. How do you know that?
Well, the person who was tasked with quality assurance in the office informed me that he never quality assured it.
Okay. And would it ordinarily have been quality assured?
Yes, so all our reports, preliminary or anything that would go out to the public, would be quality assured.
Okay. Can you briefly explain what that means? What is the quality assurance mechanism at place at the time?
The level of quality assurance involved that the investigator who had drafted it should ensure that it meets all the guidelines or the approved guidelines in terms of the report structure, in terms of the applicable law, and then the manager of that investigator would also quality assure that report or notice or provisional reports. And ideally, it would go to the think tank where it would go through another rigorous quality assurance process. And then it would go to the quality assurance unit and to the public protector.
After the provisional report was leaked, and essentially when you say leak, what do you mean? It became publicly available?
Yes, I learned that it was publicly available.
And would a provisional report not ordinarily be publicly available?
No, especially if it hasn't been sent to the affected parties yet.
Okay. What do you mean by the affected parties?
I mean the people who would be ordinarily be implicated in the investigation.
Would that include the complainants?
It would include the departments against which maybe there are provisional findings that have been found in the report.
Okay. And the people who laid the complaints?
Not necessarily.
You then in paragraph 16 refer to a meeting that occurred with an organization called Black First, Than First. Right?
Yes.
Now that meeting was a meeting that the organization requested, correct?
I cannot recall, but I think so.
In fact, you say in your first sentence that after the leak, the organization Black First, Land First requested a meeting with the public protector.
And then that could be the case.
Yeah. And this meeting was subsequently held. Correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Were you in attendance at this meeting?
Yes, I was in attendance of the meeting.
And it says that during the meeting that the organization sought to become a complainant in the CX investigation.
That's correct.
And what was the public protector's position in respect of that at the time?
I think I remember we informed them that they couldn't be complainants, but we would welcome any submission from them.
Okay. And you say in your statement that they were invited to make a submission despite the fact that they were in no way involved in the matters pertaining to the investigation or any other relevant matter.
Correct.
And were these submissions helpful towards investigation at all?
I don't recall using any or part of the submission, or if maybe they were relevant to the investigation. I don't remember them being relevant to the investigation.
Right. Now, subsequent to that meeting in January, did you meet with anybody else in that period?
In January?
No, in subsequent months, in April, to be more specific. Were you asked to set up a meeting with Mr. Goodson?
Yes, I was asked to set up a meeting with Mr. Goodson. I think it did transpire in April. I'm not so sure on the date.
And did you attend the meeting with Mr. Goodson?
Yes, I did.
And who else attended the meeting?
If I remember, the PP was there, and I think Ms. Linda Mulelapa was also there.
Right. And can you recall how the meeting came about?
I think I remember getting a book from the PP, Mr. Godson's book from the PP, who told me to read the book and that we should invite Mr. Godson, or at least meet with Mr. Godson, to hear his views on the issues of state banks.
Okay. I'm going to take you to file F, page 1175. I'm 40. Go to there. No, you must go to the bottom. So on the 10th of April, you see there's an email from yourself, from the public protector to yourself, asking you to arrange a meeting with Mr. Goodson. And you see that, Mr. Kekana?
Yes, I see that.
And you're instructed to arrange a meeting that our remedial action on Saab might come from him, and tomorrow morning collect the book he wrote on Saab to prepare for the meeting. Is that the book you're referring to?
Yes.
Right. And if you scroll up to page 1173, now you're scrolling down, scroll up. Right. And just go down a little bit. You see the response from Mr. Goodson to your request, where he says to you, "Thank you for contacting me about the South African Reserve Bank's role in the misappropriation of funds in the Absa lifeboat scandal. Unfortunately, I do not have any first-hand knowledge of these events, as I only served as a non-executive director of Saab from 2003 to 2012, whereas the events took place during the period 1985-1995. I presume that you are in possession of Dr. Kristal's statement about this operation, which he issued at the Section 417 Commission of Inquiry into the affairs of Target Holdings Limited on 26 February, and he then tells you where the statement is. You were in possession of Dr. Stahl's statement at the time, correct?
I think we were, yes, correct.
If you scroll up, you tell him that, right? And then you indicate to him that due to his extensive knowledge of the Saab and central banks in general, the public protector wished to meet with him.
I've seen that on the screen, but I think that's correct.
It's up on the screen now.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you have this meeting with Mr. Goodson. Where does it take place?
It took place in Cape Town.
Right. And you then, subsequent to the meeting with Mr. Goodson, you have another meeting which then transpires in May. And let me just take you to paragraph 17 of your affidavit. We're waiting for IT to put it on the screen. Right. So we know that Advocate Madan Salah had interviewed Mr. Palima Setla, who was a representative of the State Security Agency. And you were not able to find the transcript or the recording of that interview. Is that so, Mr. Kekana?
That's correct.
And what efforts did you make to find it?
We did make a diligent search on the documents, the transcript or the recordings, and we just couldn't find anything on Palima Setla.
And did you communicate with, who preceded you as the researcher dealing with this matter?
The investigator who had the matter before was Mr. Livwane Chualule.
And did you make contact with him?
Yes, efforts were made to find the documents through him. We called him, I think I called him even on several occasions asking him about the record.
Okay. Now, the importance of this was that it was the State Security Agency that had concluded the CX agreement. They were a party to the agreement, correct?
Yes.
And then Advocate Mkabane asked you to then arrange a meeting with SSA.
That's correct.
Right. And can you remember when that meeting took place?
On the 3rd of May, 2017.
Right. And by that stage, you already had the provisional report in existence for several months, correct?
That's correct.
Right. Now, talk us through what occurred with that meeting.
Well, before I entered the private office, I was told that the advocate was having a meeting with the minister prior to the meeting. And I think 5-10 minutes thereafter, then we started with the meeting. In attendance was the minister, the public protector, Mr. James Ramabulani and Mr. Arthur Fraser. And as normal, I took out all my notepads and the recorder so that I could record the proceedings. But I was instructed by the public protector not to record the meeting. So I took notes. And not so long before I was taking those notes, I was told that I should not take notes. There was a discussion with the parties on the South African Reserve Bank, especially in the apartheid era. Most of the conversation centered around that. And at the end of the meeting, there was an undertaking from the department that they would give us a submission in writing.
Right. So if I can take you back, you you say in paragraph 19 of your affidavit, right, that Advocate Mkabane was having a discussion with the minister prior to the meeting.
Yes.
And found it odd that she would do so.
Yeah.
Why is that so, Mr. Kekana?
Well, in a meeting of that magnitude, it was not custom, or we found it odd for one to have a one-on-one meeting with an implicated party. So that's what I found it odd about the incident.
And what was the practice at the time in respect of recordings?
Well, we would record every investigation meeting, subpoena that we had.
And if you didn't have a recordal device available, would you take notes?
Yes, naturally.
And so you say that you were surprised when you were told not to do both. Who told you that, Advocate Kikana, Mr. Kikana?
The public protector.
Did she indicate to you why you should not be doing that?
No.
And at which stage of the meeting did she say that to you?
Early in the meeting.
And you then anticipated the meeting closed with an undertaking that they would provide you with, what was it you said, some submissions?
Yes, a written submission on the version of what, how they were involved in the investigation.
Right. Was there any conversation at that stage about amendments to the Constitution?
No.
Was there any conversation about nationalization of the Reserve Bank?
No.
In paragraph 21, you then say after all the parties had made their submissions, the drafting process began. Mm-hmm. And you were then tasked with drafting the report. Right. And whilst you were drafting this report, you were informed by Advocate Mkabani to find a means of including in that report a recommendation in terms of which the Constitution would have to be amended to cater for the nationalization of the South African Reserve Bank. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you recall when this was said to you?
I can't really recall.
Was it prior to your meeting with the SSA officials or after?
I think it was after the meeting with the SSA officials.
Soon after or long after?
I think soon after, because I think at first she indicated to me verbally in one of our meetings, and after that she did give me an instruction to do that.
But there was nothing in the meeting with the SSA officials that you could link that to the instruction that was being given to you at that stage, could you?
Do you mean that the meeting that transpired on the 3rd of May?
That's correct.
No.
You then say you prepared several drafts of the final report.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them contained such a recommendation. And why was that so?
Because at the time, or actually I didn't believe that recommendation was relevant for our investigation.
Mr. Kikala, let me just take you one step back. I've forgotten to ask you a question. In leading up to the meeting with the officials of the State Security Agency, did you prepare questions to be asked at that meeting?
Yes, I remember preparing some questions for the PP.
And were those questions asked?
No.
Um, And then if I take you to, and did you follow up with the people from SSA subsequently to that meeting?
I remember doing so.
If I take you to page, go to number 14 again, page, Right. There's an email. Do you recall this that you sent to Mr. Ramabulana on the 3rd May? That would be the day on which you met with him, correct?
That's right.
That in pursuant, and you say they're kindly in pursuant to our meeting earlier today, may you kindly confirm when the PP will receive the drafts agreed to in the meeting?
That's right.
Do you get the response?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And then if you go up on the 19th of May, you send a reminder, kindly note that this is a reminder about the promised narrative from the department. Kindly forward the narrative as soon as possible as we are in the final stages of our report. Do you get a response?
No, I didn't.
And in the meantime, what are you doing? Are you continuing to draft or are you waiting for input?
I think at that time, I was waiting for inputs and I was also making a couple of drafts or drafting the report.
Okay. You then provide the public protector with a draft report. In fact, I think you do so the following day on the 4th. If one looks at your annexures, your affidavit at 2658. That's an email from the PP to yourself that says, you make sure you write a letter for my signature to SIU head to request proclamation and report by Heath. Also indicate that we might request the president to extend that proclamation to recover all those apartheid loot. What role can SIU tribunal play? Mr. Kekana, did you have the Heath report at that stage?
Yes, we did.
Are you referring to the media report that he's put out, that Judge Heath put out?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, if you scroll down on TK2 on the screen, right? Can you tell us what document that is? I think it starts at 2658. And it goes on to 2659.
Are you referring to TK2? Because I don't have the bundle that you guys have.
Sorry, I'm referring to TK. It's a continuation of TK2.
Okay.
A headed report on an investigation. To make it easy, Mr. Kekana, this is the annexure that's got the PP's changes on it. That's the document I'm referring to.
Oh, that's TK2, yes.
Right. You refer to this in paragraph 23 of your affidavit.
That's correct.
Right. Can you tell us what this is?
Basically, I had sent a skeleton report, meaning that I had sent a report with partly information and somewhere no information at all for the PP to make inputs on the report.
Fine. And how would she make these inputs?
Well, on the document that we're looking at, her inputs, except for the headings, were made in capital letters.
Okay, so if we take an example on page 266, which is 2.8.63.
Sorry, 2.8?
2.8.6.3.
Yes?
You see a caps, it says the meaning Bancorp benefiting 15% of the interest to their benefit.
Yes, that was the PP's input there.
Right. I'm not going to take you to all of them, but I'm going to take you to
So the 3 points?
4.3.7.29. It's on page 2674.
Yes. I have that.
Right. And the writing there is Goodson Books, paper from Economist, submission from BFLF, and SARS response.
Yes.
What did you understand by that?
My understanding was that we were supposed to put in inputs on those various methods that she inserted there.
And paper from Economist, what was that?
There was some talk that they would get, or the PP would get, an opinion from an economist.
Did you ever have sight of an opinion from an economist?
Not before the final report.
Now, if you go further down on the document at page 2677 under 5.2.2,
mm-hmm,
there is a note for the meeting with the SSSA to be inserted into the report, correct?
Yes. That was supposed to be the submission from the SSA that we should have received.
Right. And further down, you'll see a national treasury response must be included. And if you go on 2678, you see a repeat of we're now at 5.3, go down. You see that again we talk about the APSA response, the Saab response, the Goodson's books, and the Economist view. And if you go further down, it says common cause issues. Stop there. It says fees must fall and triple challenges. What does that mean? Can you remember?
I don't know what that referred to.
Right. And on the next page, again, we've got Goodson, Economist, and then it says Constitution, Preamble, Freedom Charter, Bill of Rights. Do you know why we're referring to the to those?
No, not the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but the Freedom Charter. I was confused as to what was the public protector seeking from me on this on this aspect.
Right. And if you then go down to 6.1, there's the word substantiated, and then on 6.2, it says substantiated because the monies were never recovered, and use written submission of SSI.
Mm-hmm.
And did you get a written submission from the SSI?
No.
And then under the remedial action, it says President Proclamation for SIU to recover all the monies and further amend the Constitution to cater for State Bank per Goodson's proposal to curb future such occurrences by bank. Did you get a written proposal by Mr. Goodson?
I think we did get some input from Mr. Goodson. He did send through an article that we had.
Okay. And then you say, in paragraph 23, the reference to Goodson is to the economist Stephen Goodson, with whom Advocate Mkabani met after the provisional report was leaked. Is Mr. Goodson an economist?
Well, at the time I was told that he was an economist, and I later know that he is not an economist.
And then in paragraph 24, you say, I did not agree with the suggestion by Advocate Mkabani, nor did I believe that this recommendation was warranted or legally sound. Did you say this to her at any stage?
Yes, I indicated to her verbally.
And what was the response?
She didn't heed to my advices or my sentiments.
And
Advocate Bauer, if you don't mind, can we pause there? We'll take a tea break for 15 minutes back at 11:45. Mr. Teboho Kekana, we're taking a 15-minute break, so wherever you are, you're allowed to assist yourself in that regard, and everybody else on the virtual will be back at 11:45. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
With a virtual tea.
Because Thank you. Welcome back. I now proceed with Advocate Bauer. Your mic. Thank you.
We were at paragraph 25 of your affidavit.
Yes, that's correct.
And you refer to annexure CK3, which is an email that he sent to you by Advocate Mkabane. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at 2681 of the documents.
Okay.
Right. Okay. I'm just waiting for it to come onto the screen. At the date on which it sent, it's the 17th of May, correct?
That's right.
And maybe you can just talk us through it while we're waiting for the screen to come on.
Well, it records that the PP thanked me for, I would think, the submission of the draft report, and she indicated that she will go through it and we will meet, and that she has asked SSA to provide input and economists. That's what the notes indicate.
Okay, now. In your affidavit, you say the input that she was seeking from the SSA related to her desire to include a recommendation in the report to amend the constitution to allow for the nationalization of the SARB. How did you know that?
She did indicate to me that the SSA would bring a draft amendment to the constitutional provision.
And up until that stage, have you drafted such an amendment?
No.
Okay. You then point out in paragraph 25 that this email was inexplicably omitted from the Rule 53 record. Why do you say that?
I know it wasn't part of the record.
How do you know that?
I think if it was or would have been part of the record, there would have been a media outcry on that. So I remember it didn't form part of the record.
Mr. Kikana, were you involved in the compilation of the Rule 53 record?
Yes, initially I was.
Did you include this letter in that compilation that you put together?
Yes, I did print everything. I printed everything and it was in the investigation file, made a copy of everything and gave it to the senior manager for legal at the time.
And who was that manager?
Mr. Nemasisi.
Now, in paragraph 26, going back to your affidavit, you then attended a meeting on the 6th of June. Can you recall how that meeting came about?
I think I was informed that there would be an economist from the SSA who would assist us with the draft amendment. And subsequent to that, there was a meeting for the 6th of June in which that economist from the SSA came to the office for a meeting.
Right, so in paragraph 26, you identify two people who come mm-hmm. to the office, Mr. Mai Moodley and Mr. James Ramabulana. Is this Mr. Simon Ramabulana, with whom you had met on the 3rd of May?
That's correct.
And Mr. Moodley, was he known to you?
No, that's the first time meeting him.
And who introduced him to you?
The PP introduced Mr. Mowgli.
And what did she introduce him as?
She said he was an economist.
Okay. And what then, how long was this meeting?
It didn't take long. Maybe 10 minutes.
Okay. What, was it recorded?
No.
And what transpires during this meeting?
Well, he produced the note on my affidavit, this TK4. He presented that to us. He gave it to the PP. And there was some form of explanation from himself regarding the note that he had provided.
And can you recall what that explanation was?
No, not really.
Now, if we go to Annexure TK4, which is 2682 of your affidavit,
mm-hmm.
right? Is this the note to which you're referring?
Yes.
And if I look at this, Mr. Kikana, and I compare it to what is contained in the report, then there is one material difference in respect of paragraph one of the recommendation. The recommendation on this page in subsection two says, let me read the entire thing. It is recommended that the following sections in the Constitution relating to the South African Reserve Bank be amended as follows, and that all corresponding legislation be duly amended. And then 2241, which is the proposed amendment, says the primary object of the South African Reserve Bank is to promote balance and sustainable economic growth in the Republic. In other words, you change the objective of the Reserve Bank while ensuring that the socioeconomic well-being of the citizens are protected. And then in subsection two, the South African Reserve Bank, in pursuit of its primary object, must perform its functions independently and without fear, favor, or prejudice, while ensuring that there must be a regular consultation between the bank and the cabinet to achieve meaningful socioeconomic transformation. Now, the only difference between that paragraph and what is included in paragraph 7.2.1 of the Public Protector Report on page, I think it's bundle A69, is that instead of saying cabinet, it says parliament. Do you know how that change came about?
I don't recall.
And then there's a subsection 2 on this page. Right? This is not included. This is not included in the report as part of the recommendations. Can you explain how this was not included in the report?
We didn't use that. I think I was instructed not to insert that.
Instructed by who?
By the PP.
And did you insert this into the report as it was drafted at that stage?
Yes, I inserted one.
Right. And on whose instructions did you insert it?
By the PP.
Did you tell anybody about it?
Yes, I remember telling Mr. Matlawi about it.
And remind me again, what was Mr. Matlawi's role at that stage?
He was entrusted with quality assurance.
Right. And did he quality assure this report, or the quality assurance unit quality assure this report before it went out?
No.
Was that usual?
No, it wasn't usual.
Now, In your affidavit at paragraph 30. You then deal with the review proceedings that were instituted in 2017. You'll recall I took the members through the various court processes this morning, right? And you indicated that you were, in paragraph 31, the task of compiling the Rule 53 record. It was your task, correct?
Yes, initially it was my task.
Right. And you also subsequently, there too, attended meetings with the appointed legal representatives.
That's correct.
Right. And in paragraph 32, you say that in August 2017, you attended a meeting with Stefan Yetsu attorneys.
That's right.
Where did that meeting take place?
At their offices.
Right. And what did you tell them about the recommendation that was being challenged at that stage?
I told them that the recommendation to amend the constitution came from the FSA.
At that stage of the legal proceedings, was that the only challenge? Was that recommendation? That recommendation was the only one that was being challenged, correct?
I'm not so sure.
You then in paragraph 33 refer to a telephone call that you received from Advocate Mkabani. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, after our meeting with Sifanyeta or attorneys, we were supposed to go and meet counsel in another meeting. And on our way to the meeting, I did receive a call from the PP indicating that she doesn't want us to disclose the draft that we have made, that only the drafts for Advocate Mkhwebane should be transmitted.
You mean Advocate Madonsela?
Oh, I mean, yes, Advocate Madonsela. Sorry about that.
Right. And where were you meeting counsel at that stage?
It was somewhere in Joburg.
Right. And what occurred? Did you relay this message to the attorneys and counsel?
Yes, I did relay the message.
And what was the response from counsel?
Counsel did not agree with the PP sentiments.
Was the PP present at this meeting?
No.
Okay. And when you say counsel didn't agree, what did he say?
Well, he indicated that everything has to be included in the Rule 53 record.
And is that how you understood it as well?
Well, at the time, yes.
You then, in paragraph 34, refer to a subsequent meeting. Can you tell us about that? Where was that meeting?
Yes, that meeting was at council chambers.
Right. And was it with the same attorneys and counsel?
No.
And when did you find out that the legal team had changed?
Well, at the meeting.
Okay. And was the PP at that meeting?
Yes, she was in attendance.
And did you say anything at that meeting?
I might have contributed minimally, but the persons that were involved from the office was the PP and Mr. Nemesis.
Okay. Now, if I take you to paragraph 35,
uh-huh.
You say you informed Advocate Mutamela of all the information at your disposal regarding the SIEC's investigation, including mm-hmm. aspects of the recommendations were prepared for the public protector by the SSA itself and not by her. When did you do that?
That was at the subsequent meeting that I went alone to council chamber.
And did Advocate Mutamela continue to deal with this matter?
I don't think so, no. I think I later learned that there was another counsel that was appointed after Mr. Advocate Captain Timay.
And do you know why initially the first counsel and then Advocate Baum was the initial counsel and then Advocate Mutamela was no longer on brief?
No, I wasn't provided with any reasons.
Now, You mentioned in paragraph 36 the presence of a Mr. Sibusisi Nyembi. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, he was present in, I think, two meetings that we had with attorneys and counsel. In the first meeting that I met him, I only knew his name. He was introduced as Mr. Sibusisi Nyembi, but I didn't know what his role was then. And in the subsequent meeting that we had with Advocate Captain Mutimela at his chambers, he was introduced as a political advisor to the PP by the PP.
And did he subsequently become employed at the Public Protector's Office?
That's right.
In what capacity?
He was first, I think, appointed as a special advisor to the PP. Then thereafter as the Chief of Staff.
He has now passed, isn't that so, Mr. Kekana?
I've learned about that.
In paragraph 37, you refer to a meeting that you had with Mr. Tialela, the senior human resource manager. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, in November 2017, I did have a meeting with Mr. Gumbi Tialela. Who informed me that the PP no longer wanted to work with me.
And what reason was given? Did you ask for a reason?
Yes, I did ask, and I was told that the PP indicated that I was talking too much to our attorneys.
Right. And did you ask the PP about this?
I did approach the PP. I did indicate to her that I didn't understand the decision, but I accepted it.
And what was her response?
I think she just thanked me for my contribution, and that was that.
You were then transferred to a different unit, still at head office, correct?
That's right.
And you were, that was called the Provincial Investigations and Integration Unit.
That's correct.
And who did you now report to?
I reported to the senior manager there, Mr. Silo Mutupi, and the executive manager, Mr. Reginald Ndo.
At that stage in December 2017, was there any mm-hmm. disciplinary proceedings pending against you?
No.
Now, I'm going to turn briefly to the Vrede Dairy Project report because you had some involvement in that report, correct?
That's right.
Right. Now, the Vrede Dairy Project report is also one of the subject matters of this inquiry. It is a report which the public protector released in February 2018, which was then subsequently challenged and set aside in court. Now, you were appointed as the lead investigator in that matter. Can you tell us how that came about?
I was informed that Ms. Erica Silias of the Free State Provincial Office was removed from the matter, and that a task team had been appointed to finalize the investigation and the report. So I was appointed myself, Mr. Ndicheni Raidani, and Mr. Muntus Thole.
Right, so just stop there for a moment. Did you, were you given any reason why Ms. Silias was removed?
Well, I was told that the PP believed that she was a Democratic Alliance member.
Okay. Who told you this?
Mr. Reginald Ndo.
Right. And he was your supervisor at the time?
That's correct.
Right. Did you have any direct contact with the PP at that stage?
No, I don't think so. No, not at all.
Right. Now, you say you were assisted by Ms. Muntu Sitoli. What position did Mr. Sitoli have at that stage?
I'm not so sure whether he was still an investigator in the private office or he, whether at that stage he was transferred to our legal services.
Okay. But he wasn't actually in Provincial Investigations and Integration Unit, correct?
No, he wasn't.
Right. Now, in paragraph 40, you say much of the evidence needed for the investigation was contained in leaked emails of members of the Gupta family, which became known as the Gupta Leaks. Correct?
That's right.
And that Advocate Mkubani stated that the Gupta Leaks were not to be used in the investigation or included in the report. Did she say that to you?
No.
Where did you hear that?
I got that through Mr. Doe.
And in paragraph 41, would it ordinarily be so, Mr. Kikani, that you would at this stage receive all the information from your supervisor?
I don't understand.
So if you got an instruction from the public protector, would you get it directly or would you get it through your supervisor?
I'll assume that I will get it from my supervisor.
You mean supervisor?
Yes, Mr. Ndo or Mr. Mutupi.
Okay. And at that stage, were there already drafts of the report that had been prepared?
Yeah, there were numerous drafts. Even the Free State office had submitted to us numerous drafts.
And the evidence, was that still in the Free State or had that been submitted to you?
It took some time to get all the evidence, but we had all the evidence at our disposal. That's what I believe.
Right. Now, how long did you work on this report?
I can't recall when the matter was allocated, but it wasn't so long after we were instructed to finalize the report.
Okay. Now, in paragraph... in paragraph 41, we're going to come in a moment to when you were instructed to finalize the report. But in paragraph 41, you indicate to you that Mr. Ndow had said to you that Advocate Mkubani had instructed him not to make any findings in the report against any politician. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you then say we were forced to remove adverse findings contained in the report against politicians,
yes,
including the then Premier and the then Minister for Agriculture.
That's correct.
And who removed it?
I think it was a collective effort between I and Mr. Raidani.
Now, can you recall what transpires in early February? What then happens in respect of the report?
Well, as indicated in my affidavit, on the 8th of February, we were instructed to report to the PP's boardroom for a meeting. We attended the meeting, and in that meeting, we were instructed that we needed to finalize the report. And the report was subsequently projected on a screen, and the PP instructed us to remove certain material or information from the report.
And was the investigation completed at that stage?
No, in our view, it was not complete.
Now, why were you given any reason why the report had to be completed at that stage?
No, none.
Do you recall whether you had been told that the report had to be finalized because there were financial constraints in investigating further?
No.
Who eventually did you stay till the end of the report when it was finalized, or did you leave before the finalization of the report?
I was tasked with a segment of the report, and I did amendments on that and submitted it, I think, to Ndicheni for him to finalize. But I wasn't there for the finalization of the report.
So did you leave?
Yes.
Can you recall anything that was specifically taken out?
What I can recall was the issue of the goods, the inflated goods. It was removed.
Can you remember any further details?
I think also information relating to the beneficiaries.
And did anybody voice any concerns at that stage?
In that meeting, Mr. Namasisi did warn the PP about the drastic edits.
And what was the response?
She said that she didn't care whether the report is reviewed or not.
When the report got taken on review, were you involved in the legal proceedings at all?
No.
Okay. Then, if I take you to paragraph 44 in your report, it's headed harassment and intimidation. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what occurred in May 2019?
I received a call on 29 May 2019 from Ms. Maureen Papo, the human resource officer, who indicated to me that I needed to attend an interview conducted by the Ale Mokashwa attorneys on 31st May 2019. I requested the reasons of the meeting and I was advised that it was not necessary for me to have this information. And I also requested that the request be put to me in writing. But I didn't get any form of written invite.
If you go to paragraph 45, what then transpires on the 31st of May?
Well, on that 31st of May, we did go attend the meeting. I went there with my union rep, Advocate Gino Singh. And at the meeting, we found officials from the Ale Mokashwa attorneys. There was no official from the Office of the Public Protector. And we raised some issues with them that we did not believe that this meeting was constituted properly or followed any due process. And after we raised those concerns, they asked us to leave the room. After 10 minutes, we were called back. And we were advised that the proceedings would not continue as they had to discuss the issues raised with their clients, the Office of the Public Protector. Then the meeting ended.
How many people were present at the meeting besides yourself and Advocate Singh?
I remember Mr. D. Diale was there. Mr. Stanley Rapezo was there. Mr. Samuel Kubushwe was there. And Mr. Ngosinathi Lote was there.
And they were all from the same law firm?
That's what we were advised.
Now, why did you say that the process was unlawful?
Because there was no policy warranting for such.
For such what?
For such action, for an interview or a form of investigation by attorneys.
Okay. And if we look at TK5 to your affidavit, which is at page 2683.
Mm-hmm.
You record what you have told us now in a little bit more detail as to what transpired, correct?
Yes, more or less.
More or less, yes. And that email is sent off at 4:30 in that afternoon.
That's right.
In fact, it's an email sent from your union representative.
Yes.
Right. And you say in paragraph 47 that 15 minutes later, the HR manager approached you. Tell us what then transpires.
Well, I received a call from Mr. Chalela, the senior manager for HR. And he indicated to me that the attorneys required my laptop.
Right. And did you ask him why?
Yes, I did ask him why, and he directed my queries to the CEO.
And did you go to the CEO?
Yes, I went directly to the CEO and inquired as to why my laptop was needed by the attorneys.
And what did he tell you?
Well, he indicated to me that they were conducting a fact-finding investigation into communications between Mr. Belden Neshumzi and Advocate Isaac Matawi.
At that stage, what position did Mr. Neshumzi have?
He was a security manager.
Okay. And you were then told to hand over your laptop?
Yes.
And were you told that you were a person of interest in the investigation?
He did indicate that.
What did that mean? What did you understand that to mean?
I really didn't know, because nobody had informed me of the investigation or any process that was being conducted against me. So I really didn't understand.
Okay. You then detail in Annexure 5 several concerns about the process, or rather Advocate Singh details it, and you repeat it in paragraph 49 of your affidavit. Can you just take us through that quickly?
The concern that I raised on paragraph 49 of my affidavit, specifically 49.1 to 49.5, were that the process undertaken by the attorneys was not sanctioned by any policy in the office. That also, as a shop steward at the time, I had confidential and privileged information on my laptop received from other employees relating to grievances and discontent. Also, I indicated that I also have sensitive information regarding pending investigations conducted or being conducted in the office, and whether the attorneys who had seized my laptop at the time had the necessary security clearances. I also indicated that the process appeared to be some kind of fishing expedition, possibly with the intention to find something on my laptop which could be used against me in order to charge me. And lastly, I indicated that there were no assurances from the employer on the legitimacy of the process.
You then laid a formal grievance, correct?
That's right.
And what happened in respect of that grievance?
Since I lodged that grievance, I never got any response from it.
Right. And and attached to that grievance is a letter that was written by the union at, as well. Attached to your TK6 was a letter dated 7th June addressed to the public protector.
Yes, that's TK7.
Yeah. You then received a letter. Well, let me go back to TK7. Sorry, Mr. Kekani. There was a complaint then raised by your union in respect of the removal of your laptop, correct?
That's right.
And then in TK8, you then asked, you invited to respond to preliminary findings because you are alleged to be in possession of unauthorized possession and disclosure of confidential information. We can call this an Audi letter, correct?
Yeah, you may refer to that.
And you responded to that letter?
Yes.
Can you just briefly tell us what happens after that?
Sorry, briefly explain what?
Can you just briefly explain what transpires thereafter?
After my response?
Yes.
To the invitation? Well, after my response, I think I got another letter from the employer, which is TK10, I believe.
Sorry, Mr. Kekani, I'm being a bit mm-hmm. vague. Go back to your letter mm-hmm. TK8, which is at 269.
Yes.
Right? in that letter,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
You detail what has occurred, and in paragraph 4 of that letter, you point out what the complaints were. No, my apologies. TK8 is the letter that he sent to you.
Yes, TK8 was the letter that was sent to me.
Right, and that letter details what the complaints are against you.
Yes, in essence.
Right. You then respond and attach to that is an email at 2694 which is the email that he sent to the CEO from Mr. Matlawe.
Yes, that email was attached to TK8.
TK8.
It was attached to the letter that I received from the employer, the Audi, the one you're referring as an Audi.
Okay.
Yes.
And who was the author of that letter?
Of TK8.
Of the letter that was attached. The email that goes to the CEO.
Oh, that was Advocate Matlawe.
And what does that relate to?
I think it related to instances of or allegations of irregular appointments, maladministration within the office.
Okay. Certain incidences which occurred in the office and it's being raised with the CEO.
Yes.
Okay. You then respond. You then respond in TK. Nine to the Audi letter.
Yes.
Right. And okay. And essentially what then transpires after that?
Well, after I responded, then I received a notice to place me on precautionary suspension, which is TK10, which I had to respond to, and I responded to it. That is my TK11. Subsequent to responding to it, I then received a notice to place me on precautionary suspension. That's TK13.
Right. And so how long were you on suspension, Mr. Kikana?
I think from August 2019 up until I was dismissed.
And when were you dismissed?
September 2020.
So roughly a year, just over a year.
Yeah.
And you were dismissed subsequently to disciplinary proceedings, correct?
That's correct.
And can you just tell us where that is in the process at the moment?
Currently, we have lodged a review application at the Labour Court.
And what relief are you seeking?
Reinstatement.
You took the approach in your affidavit, if I just take you back. In paragraph 54, that you were not provided with reasons for the decision to place you on precautionary suspension.
Yes, that's what I believed.
Were you ever given reasons?
No.
You also, in paragraph 55, says your laptop was returned to you.
Yes, it was returned after some time.
In fact, in your affidavit at paragraph 55, you say 1 August.
Yes. Well, that's after my laptop was returned.
Yeah. What did you notice about your laptop?
There were emails that were missing, especially ones coming from the public protector.
Right. Now, what are those two email addresses that you identify?
Those are the emails for the public protector.
Well, the one seems to be a PProtect domain name. Is that the domain for the office?
Yes, that's the one for the office, and the other one I suspect is a Gmail account.
And would you have received emails from the public protector from both those addresses?
Yes.
And so you say they disappeared. What did you then do?
I did lodge a query with our IT.
And what happened?
And I think they came and looked at my Outlook. They also couldn't find them. And they went to Mimecast. I think that's a software application that backs up emails. And we found some of the emails on Mimecast.
You say some.
Just a pause, Advocate Bauer. Advocate Mpofu, I recognize your hand.
Chairperson, yes. Can you please remove that information from the screen, whoever is operating this, before I speak? Yeah, thank you. Chairperson, yeah, we object to this display of Advocate Nkobana's private email addresses. Obviously, the ones that are used for public purposes are well known to everyone, but the gratuitous display of her private email is objected to as being an unnecessary invasion of her privacy. Thank you. And security.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Advocate Bauer.
Yeah, my apologies. I wasn't thinking and realizing it was on the screen. You're entirely correct. My apologies.
Thank you.
Proceed, Advocate Bauer.
Chairperson?
We are hearing the voice of the public protector. What is she saying?
No. It's me. I'm not the public protector yet.
But, I hear your voice, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, I was saying I accept the explanation from my learned friend that she was not thinking. But the point I want to make is that we have also to place on the record, with very serious security concerns on our side. Not only have we had the problems that we have mentioned here, but since yesterday morning, my emails and telephone communication has been completely blocked by some people that I refer to as the rogue unit. So it's quite serious. We think that we are the targets of dirty tricks, and that's why we don't want to have such information up there partly. I just wanted to place that on the record. As I'm speaking now, I haven't even received the messages from Advocate Bauer that I assume she was sending me. I was told by my team since yesterday morning, because I'm incommunicado because of at least one of the people I've consulted says is interference from sinister forces. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu, for
placing that. Advocate Bauer.
Advocate Mpofu, I do apologize. There was no intent in placing it on the screen. There is a bit of a delay and we're just moving through the paragraphs. And had I thought about it more carefully, we would not have put it up at all.
Thank you. No, I accept that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Mr. Kekani, you say they then went to Mimecast and they managed to retrieve some of the emails.
That's correct.
Right. And you describe Mimecast as an online backup storage system.
Yes, for our emails.
Were you provided with an explanation as to why only some of the emails could be recovered?
No. No, I wasn't.
You've attached to your affidavit the notice of precautionary suspension that was given to you, as well as the charge sheet that was brought in the disciplinary proceedings against you, correct?
Correct.
And at the time you had deposed to this affidavit on the 12th of December 2019, those proceedings had not yet been completed?
No.
And so you had not yet been dismissed?
No.
Okay, there are no further questions on our side, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer, for reading that evidence. And as you are indicating, that that's where you are pausing. The time now is 20 to 1, in the spirit of Rholihlahla Nelson Mandela, you will be having an extended lunch that will resume now at 22. We will come back at 2, and at that point, Advocate Mpofu will be invited on the stand. Mr. Teboho Kekana, we are going to pause there so that you can take that extended break yourself, and everybody else on the virtual, you can have an extended virtual break. We will resume at 2. Thank you, Public Protector and Advocate Mpofu. We'll see you at 2.
Thank you, sir.
Recording stopped. Thank you.